Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys, and I want to thank you for waking up this morning and joining me. I know many people could be in the bed and sleeping warm and cozy after a long week, but you're taking the time out to join me this morning. I'm going to have a special guest on this morning, Nikki Giovanni. I'm calling her right now.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, Ms. Giovanni.
Okay, hi.
Hi, we're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to let the audience know a little bit about you. Nikki Giovanni is a world-renowned poet, writer, commentator, activist, and educator. Over the past 30 years, her outspokenness in her writing and in lectures has brought the eyes of the world upon her. One of the most widely read American poets, she prides herself on being a Black American, a daughter, a mother, a professor of English. Giovanni remains as determined and committed as ever to the fight for civil rights and equality, always insisting on presenting the truth as she sees it. She has maintained a prominent place as a strong voice of the Black community. Her focus is on the individual, specifically on the power one has to make a difference in oneself and thus in the lives of others. She has been nominated for a Grammy Award. She has won a Caldecott Honors Book Award. She has been number 3 on the New York Times bestseller list with her book Rosa. She is one of Oprah Winfrey's 25 living legends. She has also been called a national treasure. Thank you so much, Ms. Giovanni, for being with us this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Joy.
I actually met you, I would say, almost 30 years ago when I was 9 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
I met you through your poetry. My mom, my dad, I don't know who bought it, but Spin a Soft Black Song.
Mm-hmm.
I have the book still. I have a daughter, and I passed it on to her.
Oh.
And she talked to me yesterday, and she told me one of her favorite poems. Would you mind if I read a poem from there?
Oh, I would love to hear it.
Okay, she's 15 years old, but she remembers the book, and she chose A Heavy Rap.
Oh.
A Heavy Rap. I can run faster than any gazelle. Last time I had a race, I left him on the inside corner of the Indy 500. I can outswim any old fish, gave a dolphin a half-hour start, and still beat him across the ocean. I mean, I'm so bad, I gave a falcon a half-mile lead and beat him to the top of the mountain. I roared so loud, the lion hung his head in shame, and his wife came and asked me to please leave that part of the jungle as her husband's feelings were so hurt by my together thing. I had a jumping contest with a kangaroo and jumped clear out of Australia and past the astronauts on their way back down. I can rap so hard, Rap Brown hates to be in the same town with me. And I'm only 10 this year coming.
That's a fun, yeah, that's a fun point. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. No, thank you. I mean, I think reading is fundamental, as the phrase goes, and I've definitely passed that on to my daughter. And I it's amazing, you know, that I still had this book and
yeah.
I had my name in it.
Oh, my.
This is the first edition. It's crazy.
Oh, wow. Put it on eBay.
Well, hopefully she'll pass it on to her kids. I hope so.
There you go.
So you are very involved in working with children and working with the youth. Right now you are a professor of English at Virginia Tech.
Yes.
And what drives you to continue to work with the youth?
Well, I'm really enjoying teaching. And one of the things that happened with me is that I took a job at last. So I was 40 years old before I took a real job. And it's been revelatory. I've been here at Tech for 20 years, and it does. It keeps you fresh because as a writer, you know, mostly you spend your time alone, and that's not a complaint or, you know, something like that, but writers write, you know, you're doing your research yourself, and then you're writing. So
mm-hmm.
if you don't teach or something like that, you're not having people challenge your mind so much. So I love teaching. I can't imagine. In fact, almost all the writers that I know have begun to teach, especially my age, in
right.
Some capacity, because it's just a nice way to keep track with the young people.
Keep us fresh. Now,
mm-hmm.
you know, you talk a lot in your poetry about Black people and the plight of Black people and what their role is in fighting oppression. And in one of your first books of poetry that you wrote, Black Feeling, Black Talk, you were very outspoken about what needs to be done and who needs to take responsibility. Do you think your feelings about oppression of Black people here in America have changed, grown? I mean, what do you see next for us?
Well, clearly, Black Americans have begun to drive the cultural train, as it were. And I think the election of Barack Obama does not say that there's no more racism, but it does say that if you present a clear concept, you know, for politicians or anybody else, we look at the number of black, we need more black coaches, but look at the number of black coaches. I think that black people have made changes, and I think, no, I don't think that. Black people have made changes, and the changes have been for the better.
Mm. You mind if I read one of your poems from that book? It's a poem for black boys.
Oh, no.
Okay. I think I just want to talk about that further after I read the state of young black men. But poems for black boys with special love to James.
Yes.
Where are your heroes, my little black ones? You are the Indian you so disdainfully shoot, not the big bad sheriff on his faggoty white horse. You should play runaway slave or Mau Mau. These are more in line with your history. Ask your mothers for a rap brown gun. Santa just may comply if you wish hard enough. Ask for colored instead of Monopoly. Do not sit in, do not follow King. Go directly to streets. This is a game you can win. As you sit there with your all-understanding eyes, you know the truth of what I'm saying. Play back to black. Grow a natural and practice vandalism. These are useful games. Some say a skill is even learned. There is a new game I must tell you of. It's called Catch the Leader Lying. And knowing your sense of absurd, you will enjoy this. Also, a company called Revolution has just issued a special kit for little boys called Berm Baby. I'm told it has full instructions on how to siphon gas and fill a bottle. Then our old friend Hide and Seek becomes valid because we have much to seek and ourselves to hide from a lecherous dog. And this poem I give is worth much more than any nickel bag or 10-cent toy. And you will understand all too soon that you, my children of battle, are your heroes. You must invent your own games and teach us old ones how to play.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean,
yeah,
that
nice
to me. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, it's just a nice poem.
Very nice poem.
Yeah.
What do you, I did a show recently on the state of young black males. I had, I don't know if you're familiar with activist Kevin Powell on the show from New York.
Sure, I mean, I know Kevin's work, yeah.
Yes. And, I mean, we have a situation in the black community with so many black men going into prison.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do as a people to help resolve this? What would you say to young black men who might be on a certain path that might lead them to prison? I mean, what's some of your words of wisdom?
Oh, I don't know if I have words of wisdom. I know prison's a bad idea, and I also know prison is an outdated idea. And, you know, the poem you just read, I wrote it when I was 26 years old. I'm 66. But the fundamentals don't really don't change. I think that, one, we have to quit treating prison as if it's an alternative to something. We, and I say we, I mean America. It's too many black and brown and yellow people in prison for silly offenses, for,
mm-hmm.
you know, for drugs or, you know, for something that just shouldn't, you shouldn't be incarcerated. I mean, what's his name, Robert Downey Jr., you know, does cocaine and he gets 100 hours of community service, and
mm-hmm.
you know, John Smith does crack and he gets 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's you know, that's discriminatory. The drug wars are really increasingly just bad idea. Drugs, we have to find a better way to show our disapproval. For example, let me try English here. For example, we didn't like, well, it's early in the morning where I am, but
yes.
For example, the country decided, we were tired of people smoking. Smoking is not good for you. We're not going to allow it anymore. No smoking. That's going to be it. But we didn't do that by outlawing cigarettes. We did that by restricting the places where you could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's been mm-hmm. arrested for carrying a cigarette through an airport. Nobody's been arrested for smoking in their cubicle.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
But nobody smokes anywhere. Restaurants don't have, and restaurants were like, oh, my goodness, if you can't have cigarettes, we're going to lose money in the bars. Well, if you can't have cigarettes, we're going to lose money. Nobody's lost any money. A decision was made. It was a health decision, and it was also just a good decision. Smoking's
right.
not good for you. We decided to stop it. And we could do the same thing with drugs. Because we keep picking people up and putting them in jail for making them or selling them or using them or whatever, all we need to do is restrict where you can use it.
Mm-hmm,
you know that.
Definitely.
I mean, it's just it's really
it's a
that
very simple decision. Yeah, it's
mm-hmm.
a simple decision, but sometimes people are fearful to make it. I just want to tell, we have a lot of people in the chat room. I want to let you know, Ms. Giovanni, you are loved across the board.
That's very nice.
They're sending you prayers in the chat room. They just want to say thank you for your poetry. They put some hearts, little symbols of hearts up here in the chat screen. I want to let the people know, if you want to call in, the number is 646-929-0368, and I will be taking calls in the latter part of this interview. I want to start, how did you start writing? I mean, you went to school for history.
Oh, yeah. I was a history major. I always recommend that because you're going to do the English anyway. And not just history, but another subject. If I had gone to a different school, I may have been an anthropology major. Anthropology is a great background. But what you really need if you're going to write is you need to be grounded. You need to know where something is. I'm a history major, so I'm always interested in how do things evolve? How does this movement evolve? Who are the people? Mm-hmm. How do you write about it? And, of course, you know, I'm a political poet, and so you could feel like I guess I could have been a poli-sci major, but there's not that much difference between poli-sci, you know, and history.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to, in other words, you have to know something. And
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, in terms of your commenting about writing and what it takes to be a writer, you were interviewed by Virginia Fowler in the book Conversations with Nikki Giovanni.
Mm-hmm.
This was a while back, but I thought it was a very poignant statement. You said writing is like other crafts. For example, there are ways to cut a diamond. If you cut it the wrong way, you will split the diamond. Designing how you want to cut the diamond is the art. Writing is the same thing. And so what I find very gratifying is not simply being a writer myself, but also being able to show others how to write.
Mm-hmm.
And you definitely have done that. I mean, again, I just want to let you know, in the chat room, people are telling me you're such an inspiration for them as writers. And you definitely, you are a flirt. I have to tell you that.
Me?
Yes. I fell back in love with you just preparing for this interview. I said, wow, if I had a man, he's gone.
That's wonderful.
I'm going with Nikki Giovanni, you know. I mean,
well, you know, thank you. But the thing that I am stressing, and I stress it to friends and to my students and people that ask, is, you know, you're trying to find your voice, you know. And it's not an easy thing because your voice on paper is different from your voice as you speak. I mean, you know that.
Yeah.
And so what you're trying to do is figure out how to make it sound on paper as you feel it. And one of the really, if I may say so, practitioners of his voice that's fabulous is Jay-Z. I'm a big Jay-Z fan because
and
I just love.
You were a big Tupac fan. You were a big
Tupac
fan. Oh,
you know, I love that. I love that kid. You know, there's nothing new. I mentioned Jay-Z because nothing new can come from Pac.
Yes.
You know, because of the circumstances.
Right,
what you keep trying to do is find that voice that is an authentic voice that you can share what you know and what you hope.
Mm. And talking about Tupac, in your first book, Love Poems, you opened that up. A lover whose love was often deliberately misunderstood, but who will live in the sun and the rains and whose name will echo through all the winds, whose spirit will flower and who, like Emmett Till and Malcolm X, will be remembered by his people for the great man he could have become, and most especially for the beautiful boy that he was.
Yeah, that was a loss.
I agree with you. You did Hip Hop Speaks to Children, that book also.
Yeah.
Again, working with children. I mean, this is a serious passion of yours.
Well, the older you get, and I don't mean it like, you know, I'm not on my way to old folks' home yet, but I wouldn't mind. But I did a lot of work, you know, with my contemporaries. And you realize you're talking half the time to kids, or if I was talking to, like, your daughter or something, it's a new world for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I've worked with, we did Rosa, which I was so happy was so well-received because I knew Mrs. Parks, and there was a part of her that I thought had not been shared. You know, I thought that people missed some parts of her. I completed the book on Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln because a lot of people didn't realize that there was a friendship.
Mm.
And you have to read both men to know that. And probably if I hadn't been a history major, I may have missed some of that. But that was quite a pleasure to work on. And, of course, hip-hop speaks to children because I just got so tired of people mistreating the hip-hop generation. They're great kids. And I was upset with the president the other day when he was giving his education speech.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was saying, well, not everybody can be a rapper. And I went, you know, if I could have called, I said, no, Barack, not everybody can be president. Everybody can be a rapper. You know, sure they can. And it sort of just bothered me because people are always telling kids what they can't be, and yet they have dreams and end up being things that no one ever, who would have ever thought that a skinny boy born in Hawaii, grew up and came to his manhood in Chicago, would be president of the United States. So what makes that?
I said, I didn't believe it. I mean, as the process was going on, I didn't think, I said, oh, he's not going to win. I was like, wow.
But he had a dream, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yes,
and that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to be president, and so he gave it everything. This is my point. He gave it everything that he had in order to make that dream come true.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with saying, I want to be Jay-Z when I grow up, and I'm going to put all of my efforts into learning, because Jay-Z is very well-read, as we all know, and into speaking, into how I carry myself. You know, what makes
that? Oh, no, definitely. My daughter would agree with you. She told me, Mom, no, you need to listen to Jay-Z. He knows what he's talking about, and she talks to me about the lyrics and everything, because some stuff, you know, I don't understand, but I have listened to some of his lyrics, and I will agree with you on that.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of positives in rap. When I was growing up, there's a lot of positive hip-hop and rap and what they were,
sure.
you know, talking about, just like your poetry, very political.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and unfortunately there are, just like in any, I guess, art form, there's negatives and positives,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I think
quit picking on the, you know, we were talking earlier about what's happening with the boys, quit picking on them.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather see them, excuse me, I have a cold.
Okay.
I would rather see them out break dancing or having a slam or doing a throwdown, you know, and these are not, are freestyling. You know, if you ever see a bunch of guys and women freestyling,
mm-hmm.
that's fabulous. What is the downside of that? What's the downside on television where half the time you're looking at somebody being beaten or shot or killed or tortured or something crazy? What was the downside of Deaf Poetry Jam being on television every Saturday night? There's no downside to that. This
right.
is a wonderful thing. Why shouldn't poetry be on television?
Yeah, you were on Deaf Poetry a couple times.
Yeah.
And
with that beautiful, talented young man, Most Deaf.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah,
I mean, you know, you just talent
everything.
Just, you know, I'm sure every time he cuts his fingernails, you know, we lose something. And he's a fabulous kid.
Oh, man, this is great. I want to talk about your Quilting the Black Eyed Pea book.
Yeah.
And you know, you write a lot about nature.
Mm-hmm.
You write a lot about food and
yeah,
cooking.
I do.
You like to cook.
I'm a foodie. I'm surprised
foodie.
I'm not fat.
No, you're not. I met her in person, people. She's not. She's a very petite woman, but you have a beautiful big voice that so many people love. Again, I'm just getting so many praises for you in the chat room. They love what you're saying. They agree with what you're saying about the rap and supporting young
yeah.
people. They love Most Deaf. And they're telling you to keep on preaching.
Oh, yeah, because the kids are all right. And, of course, it's important to learn things, and nobody would say it's not. But
yes.
it's also important to recognize that education has an S on it, that there are many different types of educations. We all don't do law school. We all don't do Ivy League schools. You know, we
yes.
do different. There are skills out there. And what's
yes.
wrong with you pursuing the skill that you have?
Definitely. There's
yeah.
a different path. You know, we all
it's
can't
a different
go the straight route. I want to, talking about the nature aspect of some of your poems, I wanted to read something from Quilting the Black Eyed Pea. This is
mm-hmm.
A Robin's Nest in Snow.
That's a nice point, yeah.
Yes. Outside the window of my den, where I sit usually counting clouds or airplanes or chipmunks scurrying by, on a snowy day I still see the nest through the flurries. Snowflakes are so delicate, they melt on your tongue, sit proudly on your shoulders, tangle themselves in your braids. Last spring, I didn't know a bird had made a home in my river birch. There was activity, but I thought it was the crepe myrtle. Only when the tree exhaled did the life reveal itself. The snow piled up neatly, filling the crevice, hopefully destroying the viruses and bacteria that can attack the young, still blind robins. And I am a survivor of lung cancer, nestled, hope in my heart that no harm will remain when spring and birds return.
Yeah. Yeah, I really love that. Mm-hmm.
Tears almost make me, you know, well up with tears. I know that you were dealing with the issue of cancer.
Exactly, and it was really, because my mom was still alive then, And it was, you know, I had a lungdectomy, so my left lung has been removed. So I was very, very fortunate that I'm alive, you know.
Yes.
But Mommy would come over here. She lives up the street. She would come and fix my breakfast, and it would worry her because I used to sit in the living room. And she was always, you know, my mother's a Southern woman, was a Southern, you know, so you don't sit in the living room. The living room is where you go when the preacher comes or company.
Yes, and you wrote about that. You wrote about about dusting the living room and, you know.
Well, you used to do that all the time. My aunt still does that. I just was, we had a friend who died. My dear friend of my mother's just died last Monday, the 28th, and I knew that, you know, no matter what, I was going to go. If I was alive, I was going to Flora's funeral, and so I went up to Cincinnati, but I picked up my aunt who lives in Louisville. And we went up, but you know we and she does it. Her living room is just pristine.
Mm.
But I was dealing with the fact that everything is vulnerable, and there's nothing. I mean, cancer is very scary, and so I didn't get around my house much. And I could hear things. My house is actually a very small house, and it's on one floor, and I could hear the birds and stuff. And it was the birds that really helped pull me through. It was you know, because I kept thinking, well, I want to get well. You know, you want your birds that you're watching to be proud of you. So I was just doing, you know, I was just trying to do everything I could to, and speaking of weight, I needed to gain, my doctor wanted me to gain 30 pounds. And,
wow.
Oh, yeah, that is so hard, which means, you know, you literally, if you're awake, you're eating. And we were able to do it because he said, you know, otherwise you won't be able to defend yourself against anything. You get a cold, a virus, anything can take you out. So I did work on that, and that kind of began to make my mother happy because the more I sat up, because it was very hard to sit up. I mean, it's a painful operation,
yeah.
And so I had to walk. But you know, walking was from my bedroom to my right in here to the kitchen, and so Mommy would say, "Well, I'll bring your breakfast to bed," you know, because she wants to take care of you. And I knew that I couldn't let her do that. I knew I needed to make myself get up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you just struggle with that. And that's I was looking out the window, and I realized that I have a crepe myrtle that covers the window, and usually things are up there. But then I saw the little where the robin had been, and it's like, oh, I want to be here next. I want to be here in the spring when they come back. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he really does. Yeah.
What do you think about this healthcare debate that's going on right now in terms of trying to get people coverage and you know, holding back coverage? I mean, you know, you had an illness.
I'm really unhappy
fortunate.
With the.
Yeah.
I'm unhappy with the president right now. He's got a majority in the Senate. He's got 60 seats. He's filibuster foolproof. And he's got a majority in the House because I think it's 103 to whatever. But he's got a clear majority. Close the debate. Pass the law. To hell with the Republicans and the people that are just trying to make hay out of other people's misery.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah,
it makes you crazy. When I was in the hospital, now we're talking 13 years ago, when I was having my operation, I have Blue Cross. I had what was then Blue Cross Blue Shield, right? I paid what they asked me to pay. I didn't set my rates or anything like that, but I'm in the hospital. And so now I'm going to be in the hospital for a while, serious operation. This is February, you know. And my health care said, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield is like, well, you know, we only are going to allow her to be in the hospital for 4 days. Well, no, that's not what we're going to do because you may as well shoot me if I have a lungdectomy and you put me out
Pick
of the hospital.
Out.
Yeah. then just shoot me, you know. And, of course, I'm fortunate in that I have a really wonderful lawyer. And she worked it out, you know, because I was in the hospital for a month.
Mm.
And that wasn't
fun.
It wasn't like, oh, gee, I think I'll stay in the hospital and have a good time. And you're just trying to stay alive. And I feel that way about health care, period. First of all, I think it's a right. I don't think health care is a privilege. And I think it's a necessity for all of us, legal, illegal, whatever you want to call it. The world needs health care because viruses don't respect borders or class.
Mm-hmm.
They
Definitely.
Don't, you know, and I'm always amazed. You know, I said to somebody recently, you know, rich people kill me because they are the funniest group. They are just so not nice. They want poor people to stay poor and work for them for sub-minimum wages, and usually, as we know from watching a lot of cabinet members, no Social Security, anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're turning around. You're the one. Poor people are what they would call illegals, or the one cooking their breakfast and handling their children, and they don't want you to have a shot. You know, so what is wrong with you?
That's crazy.
Of course, you want everybody to be healthy. We're the ones wiping your behind and coughing over your food.
Uh-oh.
Of course
right,
you do. You know, I mean, it just makes you so mad that they've made health care, and I think that Barack needs to be tougher. I'm tired of him trying to be nice to people that are. of no consequence. Not one of those people voted for him. So why? Well, I want to be the president of all the people. George Bush didn't. He wanted to be the president of the people who elected him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you say, well, Nikki, you know, Barack's a nicer man than George Bush. I think he is, but he has to produce.
He has to be tough.
He has to do something. And if they don't like it when he's not in office, let him overthrow it. But universal health care is absolutely essential. And it makes me crazy to actually sit down and you realize that the head of Fannie Mae gets a $2 million signing bonus for a company that's been running to the ground, and you and I are still being unemployed.
Exactly.
You look at it, unemployment is really up to around 17%. And that's just a lot of people out of work. Nothing's going to trickle down.
I want to read, you have one of your newer books, Bicycles.
I love bicycles, yeah.
Yes. I saw you, I think it was Bill Moyers.
Mm-hmm.
You were being interviewed, and I could just see the joy on your face. And so that's what I was saying, that I fell in love with you again, because you have so much love, and you have a lot of music, too, in your poetry. I mean, the poetry is musical, definitely,
mm-hmm.
but you mention music and musical artists. I mean, we just talked about Tupac and Jay-Z, but you talk a lot about jazz, and actually in Bicycles you have a poem called I Am Jazz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to read that a little bit here. It says, I am jazz. I am smooth, but not pop. I am cool, but not contained. I run the soundtrack of your life. You enter me with dissonance, then command a little rag. There may even be a prayer or two somewhere in there. I am jazz. When you are alone, I come to you, giving you rhythm to work and rhyme to care. I agree with pure jazz. I am safe for your dog, cool for the cat, salt in the pond, for your fish. You need me. Admit it. You need me. Very cute. Very cute.
I love it.
You like that? How did you start writing that book? What's your process for writing? Did something spark you? I know you talk a lot about your life. You're very open with what's going on in your life.
Well, you know, you're just a writer, so that's all you have. But Bicycle started because of loss, really. I was just so incredibly sad. My mother died on June 24th, and then my sister died on August the 10th.
Mm.
So we were literally, as my sister had a cancer that had metastasized to her brain. And so as we were taking Mommy, we are from Cincinnati, and as we were taking Mommy's body back to be buried in Cincinnati, we had to stop at the hospital to get treatments for Gary, because brain tumors are incredibly painful.
Mm.
And you know, so I knew that all I was going to do is bury one and then, you know, the next. And I was just very sad. But then my good friend Rosa died that October, as you know.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't know she was my friend, but you know that Rosa Parks died.
Yeah, I knew she
Coretta
died.
Died. Nina Simone died. And all of a sudden I'm looking around, and I went from being a baby in the family and one of the youngest people to being an elder in less than a year. And I kept saying to myself, you know, you have to pull out, because you get so... I'm not prone to depression. I'm always prone to saying, you know, what is the what's the opportunity? I'm always looking for something good to happen. But it was just sad. I miss my mother. I miss her yet.
Yes.
And so I thought I have to work my way out of it. You know, it's one of those whistle a happy tune kind of things.
Right, right.
That you just have to. I just said, Nikki, you have to do better, because if you don't do better, you're going to do worse. And the best way to lift your spirits is you start writing love poems. So I gave myself a challenge that every time I heard a line, I would turn it into a love poem. Well, ultimately, of course, as Bill Moyers said, you know, ultimately it's going to get to be a little racy there, and I love that, of course. But I started off with just trying to take a line. For example, I do listen. I have Sirius Radio. I'm sorry that they, were taken over by XM or whatever, because I miss my girl Rhonda Hamilton, who was a great jazz disc jockey, very knowledgeable. Very wonderful, and they fired Rhonda because they always fire people that I like, in my opinion. I'm mad at them. I'm serious about that. But I listen to pure jazz, you know, and that's one of their taglines is safe for your dog. Safe for your dog and cool for the cats. And
okay.
I thought, well, that's a good line. Now, how do you make that into a love poem? Well, we came up, I am jazz, right?
Right, right.
I run the soundtrack of your life. Because if your soundtrack of your life is running on jazz, you're in pretty good shape.
Do you mind? I'm going to take some callers now.
Sure.
We have about 15 minutes left. I see a caller here, a 770 number. Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you tell us your name?
Yes. Oh, wow. I can't believe I'm in.
You're in. Yes. Please ask your question.
Okay,
go ahead.
Let me move. I am so sorry. I am the Duchess Poet, and actually, Nikki, I just did a show with Big, I always call him the wrong name because I have another guy, but Big Tiger, and we talked about you. Actually, we were supposed to be talking about him, but we ended up spending the entire show talking about you as he flew in to do an interview with you because he does poetry over jazz. Of course, the interview was fantastic. We loved it. When I saw you in Atlanta, I promised you cabbage.
Yes.
and unfortunately, we have not been able to get together for that. But if you have an opportunity, please go and check out our show. Tell me what you think. And it's called 360 Degrees of Poetry, Music, and Artistic Expression. Because we, too, would love to have you. Spend some time
thank
with
you.
And talk to you. And listen, Joy, excellent job. Excellent.
Thank you so much.
Excellent
thank
job.
Thank you for listening.
And thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Thank
no
you.
Problem. I want to take another caller. this caller is from 484 area code. Good morning. Can you hear me? All right, we'll try another person. There are so many people in the chat room also saying just thank you again for you know, being on the show. And they're just saying you're a blessing. People were talking about, I guess, their loss in their lives. Somebody's father had been dealing with cancer. They mentioned that in there, colon cancer. I mean, that's a big issue.
Oh,
that's
incredibly painful.
Yeah.
You know, television and movies always treat cancer as if it were just a casual, you know, like, oh, I have cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't ever see that the people are in pain. But cancer is a painful disease, whether it's leukemia in your blood or something in your marrow or colon cancers, of course, things like that are just incredibly painful. And you need a lot of help and a lot of drugs to, you know, to
handle,
get through.
Yeah,
because, you know, all of that, somebody was saying, well, you know, you don't want to take drugs because you'll end up a junkie. I said, no, I'm dying. It's not going to happen. So why should I be comfortable? And so I've gotten, you know, very disenchanted. Not me, Nikki, I'm not dying. I'm just saying people that have cancer.
Yes.
And everybody gets more worried about whether or not they're going to be addicted to whether or not we can make them comfortable. And we have to make people comfortable.
Yeah.
We
Let
really
me take
do.
Let another caller here. 484, can you hear me now?
Yes, hello?
Hi, you're on the air. What's your question?
Ms. Joy, I just want to thank you for having Ms. Nikki Giovanni on your show. I just wanted to say that Nikki Giovanni, you're the icon in my heart, and I just thank you for being a servant to the universe, and I just wish more poets that they had that rebel spirit. I mean, you inspire me so much as a poet to speak out against a whole bunch of things, and especially for the times that you was really in your heyday, you know, and speaking with you. I just wanted to say thank you. You know,
thank you.
Thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you.
I see an 847 number. I want to take that call. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing, sister?
Hi, how are you doing? Do you have a question for Ms. Giovanni?
I do. First, I want to say thank you, like the brother just said, for having such a wonderful celestial body with us. This is Brother Shambe from Freedom Verse Cafe, and I got a question for you because I was talking to the poet Shihan yesterday about the importance of what we give back to our universe.
Right.
And I'm interested in knowing who it is that you read book-wise. What author do you recommend that other poets who are aspiring to develop their craft read?
Well, you got to read, thank you. You've got to read the other poets. I mean, first of all, you know, you just have to. Or even, and you're sounding way younger than I am, you know, listening also, you know, get your CD and find out what these kids are saying. But my favorite young writer right now is a wonderful young woman named Edwidge Dadeket. And Edwidge is a Haitian-American. And she wrote The Dewbreaker, The Farming of the Bones. But she's just a really a lovely young lady. And she just won a MacArthur, and I was so pleased. I just sent her a note when I looked at the MacArthur thing. She won a MacArthur Award. So
yeah.
I'm so I'm so happy because you love to see the young black women find their voices. And Poet, writing-wise, she's just a gorgeous writer. Her writing is just beautiful. But she's such a sweet person. So I thought, well, it's good. You know, sometimes the good guys win. So
yeah.
I was glad to see that she got a MacArthur. And I'm looking forward to the books that will come out of her having the kind of time that she now has to, you know, to do her research.
Yes.
And she is a meticulous researcher, by the way.
Well, you just talked about that earlier, about how writers need to delve into other areas to, I guess, be better writers. And, like, for example, you know, you did history. And also, you were doing some science fiction writing with your Quilting the Black IT with, you know, us going to Mars. You know, you thought we should be the ones going to Mars. And that people need to, you know, learn from our experience and how do we, as a people, and I'm talking African-American people, survive.
Yes.
You know,
can you imagine, though, if you would be a Martian and you'd look around and some of these Republicans were what you were dealing with? You'd say, I don't want to go. I'm not going to Earth anymore. So we need some black people in space so that we, you know, we can show people we're friendly.
Yes, definitely. I want to take another caller, 61. I think it's 612 area code. Good morning.
Good morning. I don't even know. I don't even want to introduce my name because I can't even bask in. I just want to bask in Dickie's glow.
Do you have a question, sir?
But I'm just gonna say I'm the educated poet. I represent Poetic Uprising and 107.5 WDEP Radio. And I just want to say, Ms. Giovanni, I love your work.
Oh, thank you.
I was able to watch your broadcast when you talked about the broadcast that you were doing on your special about when you did the Rosa book.
Oh, yes.
I completely love that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Regrettably, I missed you both the times you were in Minneapolis last year.
I practically live in Minneapolis, so you can find me almost any time. You know, you guys up in Minneapolis have one of the best poetry communities in the world. It's just amazing. Everybody loves to come up, you know, for anything. You all are a very wise poetry group, you know. So coming to Minneapolis with poetry is like, you know, going to Miami for football or something. You know, it's just incredible what you all know. So you have to bring your best game. And I'm sure that everybody knows that. Plus, of course, you got the kid that I love a lot who isn't doing what he should be doing right now, but he's still a great kid, Prince.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
yeah,
Prince
well,
and the Time
yeah.
and Morris and them, I mean, they really have done a fine job of putting Minneapolis on the map.
Yes, they
Thank
did,
you.
And people are just trying to keep it on there, and I'm trying to do my little part to help us
oh,
up
yeah.
there. I was just wondering, do you have any plans on ever coming back? Because I missed you. You were here almost, for like 2 weeks, and I couldn't get off either time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was back to back. No, I come to Minneapolis, as I say, a lot. And anytime I have any kind of excuse, because it is a fabulous city. I don't have a new book this year because last year I did 4 books, 2 children's books, you know, 1 an anthology and 2 an adult book. So I'm not traveling this year, and that's just it's good for me. I need to stay home, and I need to think. But
Thank
I will
so
be.
Much.
I will definitely be back up. Not a problem.
Thank
okay,
you very
yeah,
much. I'm going to take another caller.
See you when you come through.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, you are working at Virginia Tech, and, you know, that's, again, going back to your teaching roots. I want to take a 240 caller here. 240, can you hear us? Good morning.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah.
Do you have a question?
Okay. Yes, I do. My name is Shelley, Silent 7, and I'm shaking. My question is, at the point where you sit down to write, did you ever know or realize how far it would go, how deep your words would touch people, or was your purpose to touch people, or were you just sharing what you knew from being knowledgeable about history, or were you attempting to tear down walls? But at the point where you're by yourself and you sit down with your pen, your pad, or your laptop or whatever you do you realize how far it will go?
No, you don't. I mean, one doesn't. What I try to do is just be as honest as I can. And so I get a reputation of being brutal, and I'm not brutal. I'm just honest. And what I'm trying to do is the best that I can do. because I grew up in a Baptist church, and what they always said is tomorrow is not given. So you have to do whatever you're going to do, you have to do it today. And that's the way I approach my poetry.
Thank you very much, caller.
Thank you. Good luck.
Good listening. I wanted to, talking about the love poems and stuff, I do want to read a love poem. We have to read. This is from your first love poems book, I Take MasterCard.
Oh, Charger, love to me.
I mean, I just read that and I just started smiling. I again want to say thank you for being on this morning. And again, the chat room is filled with people expressing their love and support and hoping that you get over your cold and gain weight if you need to gain weight.
Thank you.
And what an inspiration you are. I want to thank all the listeners who are listening on their computer, who are in the chat room, who are calling in. Thank you for taking the time. We have 4 minutes left, but I want to read. I Take MasterCard. Charge your love to me. I've heard all the stories about how you don't deserve me because I'm so strong and beautiful and wonderful, and you could never live up to what you know I should have, but I just want to let you know. I take MasterCard. You can love me as much as your heart can stand, then put the rest on account and pay the interest each month until we get this settled. You see, we modern women do comprehend that we deserve a whole lot more than what is normally being offered, but we are trying to get aligned with the modern world. So, baby, you can love me all you like because you're pre-approved and you don't have to sign on the bottom line. Charge it up till we just can't take no more. It's the modern way. I take MasterCard to see your Visa, and I deal with a Discovery, but I don't want any American Express because, like the Pointer Sisters say, I need a slow hand.
Yes.
Oh, man. I mean, I'm just smiling. And we have 3 minutes left. What are some closing words you have for the aspiring poets out here? You talked about being diverse in their knowledge. What else would you offer to them?
Oh, yeah. And share. I just said it to my class. Share your ideas. Because everybody thinks, oh, if I say this, somebody will steal my idea. If you can think of it, you can think beyond it. But if you don't share it, you'll be stuck with it. So always bring your A game.
Mm.
Always do, you know, be on the edge someplace. Share it. Because eventually it's going to come back into where you're into the habit of doing excellent work. And that's what you want to do. You want to habituate it.
Wow. Thank you so much, Ms. Giovanni.
Oh, thank you. This
morning. I hope you feel better. I hope you get over your cold. And hopefully you can come back at another time when you write another book or do another
call. I hope you get another book. I'd be glad to come back.
Thank you so much for listeners for joining me. I'm going to be having some special shows coming up next Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern. Chana Garcia, she was just featured in Black Enterprise, speaking about her ovarian cancer fight. I'll also be doing a special show on Monday the 12th with a jazz bassist, Christian McBride.
Whoa.
So, if you like
him. I'm a big fan. He's fabulous.
Oh, well, call in Monday, October 12th. You can call in and talk to him.
Oh, you know what I'm going to be doing Monday, October 12th?
Oh.
Ruby D is coming down to Virginia Tech, and we're reading poetry.
Wow.
At 11 o'clock, we're going to be in a studio reading Gwen Brooks.
Oh,
I am so thrilled. Yeah, Ruby's my sorority sister, and so she was like, you know, I said, Ruby, you know, we need to get this project done. I'll be there.
Oh,
so Ruby's
excellent.
Coming in. Oh,
well,
yeah, I'm so excited.
You can listen to the archives. You can listen to the archives of my conversation with Christian. We
sure
have 30
will.
Seconds left, and I just want to say again, thank you so, so much for being on this morning.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Tell Christian I'm a big fan.
Okay.
Okay.
I will let him know.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you again for everyone for joining me this morning. I really appreciate your support. And tell your friends if they missed this morning, they can listen to the archive of the show with Ms. Nikki Giovanni, a jewel, definitely a national treasure. And I just hope she continues to live on and provide so much of her knowledge and inspiration and love to us here in the world. Thank you so much, everyone. I hope you have a wonderful Saturday. Again, also this Monday, October 3rd, I'll be having another show. Just look at my website. But check in for Chana Garcia next Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern, and check in for Christian McBride October 12th at 7 p.m. Eastern. That's a special show, 7 p.m. on October 12th. Have a wonderful day, everyone. Thank you.